Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one and only Sean Sports Talk Podcast. As always, I'm coming at you from the usual Los Angeles, California. If I sound not like my usual self or a little clogged up or whatever it may be, as you might hear, I'm still coming off, a virus, a sickness. But I'm definitely on the other side of it, and obviously good enough to do a podcast episode. And we're going to get right into it, starting with the NFL. The New York Giants snapped a three-game losing streak with a 31-19 victory over the Washington Commanders on Sunday, but they couldn't properly cool off from the hard-fought matchup. Per Adam Schefter of ESPN, neither team was able to take a post-game shower, as the team said that a, quote, equipment failure caused the water in both locker rooms at FedEx Field to be shut off. We had an equipment failure in the main water heater that provides hot water to the field-level locker rooms. The team's statement said, we can't resolve the matter without completely shutting off the water to the stadium, which is why it couldn't be repaired in-game. Wow. The Giants forced 6 turnovers in Sunday's victory, including 3 interceptions by Commanders quarterback Sam Howell. New York linebacker Isaiah Simmons sealed the game with a pick six with 16 seconds left in the fourth quarter, ending Washington's comeback hopes. Giants undrafted rookie quarterback Tommy DeVito was sacked 9 times, but threw 3 touchdowns to earn his first career NFL win, so congrats to him. ESPN's Jordan Renan reported after the game that the Giants were not ecstatic about the lack of hot water. However, DeVito seemed to brush it off when speaking to reporters, saying, do you see my hair? The equipment malfunction added insult to injury for the Commanders, who entered the game as the favorite while facing the last place team in the NFC East. Washington put forth an uninspiring effort that once again raises questions about head coach Ron Rivera's future with the team. Quote, it's a low point, that's for sure, Rivera said after the loss. Anytime you've got an opportunity to win a football game and you put the numbers up, you did, and you get a chance, you've got to come through. The Commanders, who are now 4-7, will try to avoid putting themselves in a deeper hole in the playoff race when they return to action on Thanksgiving Day against the Dallas Cowboys, who are 7-3. The Giants, who are now 3-8, will look to make it 2 wins in a row when they face the horrible 2-8 New England Patriots. With that said, what do we got next? Let's talk about some more NFL. Oh, Zach Wilson. The New York Jets have found themselves in a familiar position, as they've been forced to bench quarterback Zach Wilson in Sunday's 32-6 loss to the Buffalo Bills. Journeyman backup Tim Boyle took over late in the third quarter. This marks the third time in the last 2 seasons that Wilson has been benched amid the Jets' offensive struggles. Head coach Robert Saleh told reporters after this game that he is undecided on who will start Friday's game against the Miami Dolphins. Oof, the Jets were trailing 29-6 at the time of Wilson's benching. He completed only 7 out of his 15 passes for 81 yards prior to exiting the game. He threw an interception in the first half, but also threw a 9-yard touchdown pass to running back Breece Hall, which marks New York's first time reaching the end zone in the last 3 games. Wilson struggled mightily to find the footing throughout the game, as he was sacked 5 times behind the Jets' offensive line that trotted out its 6 different combinations this season and lost starting left tackle Mekhi Becton to an ankle injury in the first half. Wilson has definitely failed to become the franchise quarterback that he was expected to be when the Jets drafted him with the 2nd overall pick in 2021. The 24-year-old has looked ill-prepared to play at the professional level throughout his 3 years in the NFL thus far. The 2023 season was intended to be a redshirt year for Wilson after the Jets acquired star quarterback Aaron Rodgers. However, he was thrust into action when Rodgers tore his Achilles 4 plays into the first game of the season. New York chose not to acquire a veteran backup prior to the trade deadline, leaving the team with no choice but to ride with Zach Wilson. Apparently, the team had seen enough on Sunday, as it suffered its 3rd straight loss. Saleh will have much to answer for after the game, as Sunday's benching once again raises questions about Wilson's future with the Jets. Oof. More on the Jets later, perhaps, but first, the former Jet veteran quarterback Joe Flacco is reportedly signing with a former longtime rival. According to Adam Schefter of ESPN, Flacco has signed with the Cleveland Browns practice squad in the wake of the season-ending injury to Deshaun Watson. There's an expectation that Flacco will be elevated to the active roster to provide the Browns with some added quarterback depth. The 38-year-old spent the first 11 years of his career with the Baltimore Ravens, winning a Super Bowl in 2012. But with Lamar Jackson emerging as the future of the position in Baltimore in 2018, Flacco was traded to the Denver Broncos ahead of the 2019 season. Flacco appeared in 8 games for Denver, throwing for over 1,800 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions, completing 65.3% of his passes. The Broncos went 2-6 at his starts and turned the reins over to Drew Luck. So the Delaware product found himself on the free agent market, signing a 1-year, $1.5 million deal to serve as Sam Darnold's backup with the New York Jets before the 2020 season. He made 5 appearances, throwing for 864 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. The Eagles brought him aboard ahead of the 2021 season, though he was traded back to the Jets in October with Zach Wilson out of action because of injury, the aforementioned Zach Wilson. He returned in 2022 and opened the season as the team starter while Wilson dealt with another knock. He threw for 1,051 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions last season, completing 57.6% of his passes. The Jets went just 1-3 in his starts. He went unsigned in the offseason, though Flacco told ESPN in early September that he was eyeing a return, saying, quote, "Listen, I can still play. That's me talking. Obviously, I'm hoping that there's the silver lining that I'm not anywhere right now and that I can be available to anybody. I'm not saying it's going to be the truth, but if I was tied up with somebody as a backup and just didn't play at all when all of a sudden 3 guys go down, well, I'd probably be in the back of my head and be thinking, oh man, would I have had an opportunity to go there? So I do think that at the point that my career is in, it is a positive thing in a lot of ways that I'm not anywhere right now, because if somebody does need somebody, at least I'm available." Cleveland needed someone. Enter Joe Flacco. It's hard to imagine many things weirder than seeing Flacco, a former longtime Baltimore Raven, in a Browns uniform this season. But when Deshaun Watson was lost for the season, Cleveland was left with just journeyman veteran PJ Walker and rookie Dorian Thompson-Robinson at the quarterback position. The Browns have an elite defense, and squandering a potential playoff year wasn't an option, so the Browns clearly had enough doubts about Walker and Thompson-Robinson to give Joe Flacco a shot. And I think it's absolutely a smart decision by the Browns. The Jets should have brought Flacco back again for a third stint. But yeah, now let's switch gears to some MMA. We don't talk about MMA often, but this is huge. The Professional Fighters League acquired Bellator MMA to, quote, create a stronger competitor to UFC, according to Samer Al-Attroush of the Financial Times. PFL founder Don Davis told Al-Attroush the deal, quote, totally changes the MMA landscape overnight. You essentially put 2 number 2 companies to create a co-leader. The combined PFL Bellator roster now has 30% of its fighters who are ranked top 25 in the world by Fight Matrix. That's the same as UFC has in their roster. Everyone on the Bellator roster is now a part of PFL. Davis also teased a, quote, mega event in 2024 that will pit champions from the 2 promotions against each other. That would be very fun to watch for sure. Rather than ditching the Bellator branding, the PFL said in Monday's press release, it's creating the Bellator International Champions Series, which will feature 8 standalone events each year. Fighters signed to Bellator will have the opportunity to compete in the PFL as well. This deal symbolizes the PFL's rapid ascent in the MMA world. Signing unbeaten boxing star Clarissa Shields in 2020 was a bit of a coup. Striking a deal with Jake Paul in January brought plenty of mainstream attention. Then came the biggest move of all, bringing aboard former UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou. Perhaps the most transformative development for the PFL, however, came when it sold a minority stake to a company owned by the Public Investment Fund for more than $100 million in August. The PIF is Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund and the mechanism through which the country has built a bigger and bigger footprint in sports. Some have described the strategy as quote-unquote sports washing, a way for Saudi Arabia to improve its image abroad and deflect attention away from ongoing human rights abuses within the country. It's not as though the UFC status as the premier power in MMA is under immediate threat, but a merger between the PFL and Bellator, fueled in part by Saudi riches, could create a serious challenger to the throne over the years to come. I think this is, at the very least, significant enough to talk about. Transitioning to some basketball, Bronny James continues working toward his debut for USC after partaking in pregame warmups for the first time before Sunday's 81-70 win over Brown. Quote, "Today's game was the first game he got an opportunity to warm up with his team, Los Angeles Lakers star and his dad LeBron James told reporters of his son. So he's almost there, he's almost there." Bronny, if you don't know, suffered a cardiac arrest while working out on the court in July. He remains a member of the USC team, and LeBron said on November 6th that his son intends to suit up once he passes a physical. Trojans head coach Andy Enfield remains unsure when the 19-year-old will be fully cleared, though, saying, quote, he went through warm-ups with the team. He's a big part of our program and our team. He's a terrific teammate. We look forward to hopefully one day getting him back on the court. But when that day is, that's not my decision. We're going to patient and go through the process. James was the most closely followed star in the 2023 recruiting class, thanks to a mix of his family name, obviously, and his individual exploits on the court. He was the number 22 overall player in 24/7 Sports' composite rankings, and he has garnered some NBA draft buzz, obviously. The hype around USC was especially strong because Enfield also signed Isaiah Collier, the top-ranked prep player in the country. The Trojans have gotten off to a 3-1 start with Sunday's win. The rest of their non-conference slate includes a December 2nd matchup with number 11 Gonzaga, and they begin Pac-12 play with a December 28th road game against the Oregon Ducks. Let's switch gears to some baseball. Japanese sensation Yoshinobu Yamamoto is officially free to begin his MLB career. Per the New York Post, Yamamoto has been posted by the Oryx Buffaloes, and his window for negotiations will open at 5 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday. Teams have until 2 p.m. Pacific time on January 4th to agree to terms with the coveted pitcher. Yamamoto is expected to be one of the most sought-after pitchers on the open market after his stellar career with the Buffaloes, which began in 2017. He has a career record of 70-29 and went 16-6 with a 1.21 ERA and 169 strikeouts in 164 innings in 2023. Per ESPN, quote, his trademark is his wide assortment of breaking pitches, excellent command, and a fastball in the mid-90s. The 25-year-old will have no shortage of suitors this winter. John Heyman recently reported that the Yankees and Mets are among the teams that will be in hot pursuit of Yamamoto. The Red Sox, Cardinals, Braves, Dodgers, and Astros are all believed to be seeking a number one starter, and Yamamoto would certainly fill that role. The Philadelphia Phillies made the first major move of the offseason by re-signing veteran starter Aaron Nola to a 7-year contract worth $172 million on Sunday. However, Alex Coffey of the Philadelphia Inquirer later reported that the Phillies are, quote, still in the market for Yamamoto, and a source said they plan to be pretty aggressive in pursuing the right-handed phenom. Heyman noted that there's a rumor that Yamamoto may prefer the West Coast, so it could be tough for teams like the Phillies, Yankees, or Mets to convince him to sign with them. Regardless, Yamamoto's next landing spot will be one of the most intriguing storylines of the offseason. I'm praying as a Dodger fan that we get Yamamoto. But back to the New York Jets. The New York Jets are finally making a change. Following Sunday night's 32-6 loss against the Buffalo Bills, a game in which they gained only 155 yards of total offense and lost 4 turnovers, the Jets are benching quarterback Zach Wilson in favor of Tim Boyle. New York head coach Robert Saleh confirmed the news, adding that Trevor Siemian will serve as the team's backup. So Zach Wilson goes from the starter to the third string. There was a sense of inevitability in the reaction to the news, along with general bewilderment about why the Jets didn't make a change sooner. There's no other way to say it. He's been awful this year, throwing for 1,944 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions, taking 38 sacks while completing only 59.2% of his passes. His struggles haven't come as a huge surprise, given that he threw for 15 touchdowns and 18 interceptions in his first two seasons. But he was so bad on Sunday night that his head coach Robert Saleh, who has defended him throughout the season, benched him in the third quarter, foreshadowing Monday's news. Quote, like I told Zach on the sideline, it's not just him. It's easy to point the finger at the quarterback, but it's pretty easy to see. You've got missed protections, you've got dropped balls, you've got missed routes. Now, obviously, he has to get better. There are things he could have done a lot better, but it's everyone right now. Wilson said on Sunday night that he understood Saleh's decision, saying, quote, frustrated, but I get it. You have to score, have to be in games. When it's consecutive games of just doing nothing on offense, you know you can sit there. You can sit here and say last week, so we moved the ball, but we're not scoring. It essentially comes down to you have to score. So when things aren't getting done, change has to be made, and I understand that. Wilson was also benched twice last season, and at this point, it seems that any plans of having Wilson learn under Aaron Rodgers, who again is currently recovering from an Achilles injury, and become the long-term successor, are foolhardy. Wilson has put 32 NFL games on tape, and the tape is rough. The present may continue to be rough for the 4-6 Jets, too. Boyle, 29 years old, has only made 3 career starts and has lost all of them. In total, he's thrown for 607 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions in 18 appearances. So the career backup will get thrown to the Wolves against the AFC East leading Miami Dolphins, who are at 7-3 on Friday, trying to save the Jets' season. Shit. It's hardly ideal, but at this point, the Jets are assuming it can't get much worse than it is. Let's see. What's next? Excuse me. Let's talk some more baseball. The Texas Rangers are reigning World Series champions, which is quite the sales pitch to any free agent, including Shohei Ohtani. Quote, money's great, but winning's better, Max Scherzer said during an appearance on Foul Territory TV when asked to make a pitch on the Rangers' behalf for Ohtani. If you want to come win, that's better than money, I promise. Scherzer came to the Rangers last season via trade from the New York Mets in a move that certainly worked out well for the veteran pitcher. He posted a 3.2 ERA, 0.96 whip, and 53 strikeouts in 8 appearances in 45 innings for the team in the regular season and then won a World Series ring in the postseason. Ohtani is a generational talent who is coming off an MVP season, and if not for Aaron Judge hitting 62 home runs in 2022, Ohtani would be a back-to-back-to-back three straight MVP. So Scherzer is pitching Ohtani, but I don't really see him going to the Rangers. Switching gears back to football, the Los Angeles Chargers defense will be without Joey Bosa for the foreseeable future, as the defensive end is likely headed to injured reserve after being diagnosed with a foot sprain, head coach Brandon Staley told reporters on Monday. Bosa went down with the injury in the first quarter of the Chargers' 23-20 loss to the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. He was carted off the field and did not return. The four-time Pro Bowler has accumulated 6.5 sacks in 9 appearances this season. Staley told reporters that it's, quote, to be determined if Bosa will be able to return before the end of the season, per the Los Angeles Times. The 28-year-old has been one of the league's best pass rushers when healthy, although he struggled to stay on the field in recent years. He missed 4 games during the 2020 season due to his placement in concussion protocol twice, then missed 12 games in 2022 after suffering a groin tear in Week 3. Although the Chargers' defense hasn't been as dominant in 2023 compared to recent years, their ability to hassle opposing quarterbacks has remained strong. Los Angeles has accumulated 34 sacks this season, which is the fourth most in the NFL. However, the team as a whole continues to perform well below expectations. The Chargers own a record of only 4-6, sitting in last place in the AFC West. Los Angeles' remaining schedule doesn't get much easier either, as Staley's team still has matchups against the conference contenders such as the Ravens, Chiefs, and Bills. In the meantime, the Chargers will rely on increased production from rookie outside linebacker Tuli Tuipulotu. The second-round pick has racked up 4 sacks in 10 games played. But obviously, Joey Bosa, you know, that's huge right there. Nikola Jokic was ejected. Denver Nuggets superstar Nikola Jokic and head coach Michael Malone were both ejected in the first half of the team's Monday night matchup against the Detroit Pistons. Jokic was tossed after picking up his second technical, arguing that he felt a foul should have been called after committing a turnover. Malone was ejected earlier in the half, racking up 2 quick technical fouls in succession before the end of the first quarter. Jokic recorded 9 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists before he left the game. This was the 8th career ejection for the 2-time MVP and his first since the 2021-22 season. The perceived lack of foul calls has been a common theme for the Nuggets players and coaching staff throughout the season so far. Denver was attempting 18.8 free throws per game heading into their clash with the Pistons, which is the 3rd lowest in the NBA. This is despite the Nuggets averaging 28.6 shots per game in the restricted area this season prior to Monday night. That's the 7th highest mark in the association per NBA.com. Denver entered the night with a respectable 9-4 record as the franchise attempts to defend their 2023 NBA championship, although the Nuggets were riding a 2-game losing streak. Malone's team was already without star guard Jamal Murray, who continues to deal with the lingering effects of a hamstring issue. Denver is just 3-3 in the games that Murray has missed so far. While the team around him has struggled, Jokic has continued to perform exceptionally well. The 28-year-old has averaged 28.8 points, 13.8 rebounds, and 9 assists per game while shooting 58% from the floor in 13 games. Despite the pair of ejections, the Nuggets still led Detroit at the half 56-55. That's that. More football here. Amid the season... Long struggles for Kenny Pickett and the offense. Matt Canada has been fired as Pittsburgh Steelers offensive coordinator. Head coach Mike Tomlin announced on Tuesday that Canada has been relieved of his duties. Speaking to reporters about the change, Tomlin explained he didn't see enough, quote, rapid or, quote, consistent improvement from the offense to stay with the status quo. He said this is a results-oriented business. The improvements were not consistent enough or consistent enough. You have to score touchdowns in this business. Per NFL Network, the Steelers are expected to elevate running backs coach Eddie Faulkner to offensive coordinator, and quarterbacks coach Mike Sullivan will handle play-calling duties. The situation with Canada was becoming untenable for Tomlin and the Steelers. Pittsburgh fans have been chanting for the 51-year-old to be fired during home games and at non-Steelers sporting events in the city. Things seem to come to a head following Sunday's 13-10 loss to the Cleveland Browns. The defense only gained 249 yards and picked up 12 first downs in the game. Sorry, the offense. After the loss, Tomlin did point out that the Browns have one of the NFL's best defenses when asked what his team needed to do to get the offense going, saying, quote, they have a really good defense. They make a lot of offenses look like that. Coupled with their venue, we have to give them some credit. We knew their reputation in week two. Maybe the rest of the National Football League didn't. It's kind of been confirmed in the weeks after that, and obviously they were really good today. While it is true that Cleveland has shut down many teams, this wasn't an outlier performance by the Steelers. They have been outgained all 10 games they have played this season. They rank 28th in yards and points per game. Perhaps more concerning than the stats is the performance of Pittsburgh's first-round draft picks in 2021 and 2022. Najee Harris is on pace to average fewer than 4 yards per carry for the third consecutive season. Wow. Pickett has thrown for 4,126 yards with as many touchdowns as interceptions, which 13 each, in 23 career games. His 35.7 QBR this season is the fourth worst among qualified quarterbacks, ahead of only Ryan Tannehill, Zach Wilson, and Bryce Young. The Steelers aren't devoid of talent on offense. George Pickens has shown a knack for making spectacular plays and is averaging 16.3 yards per reception this season. Deontay Johnson had 20 touchdown receptions in his first three seasons, but he has just one since the start of 2022. Jaylen Warren leads the Steelers with 1,727 yards from scrimmage. His 6.2 yards per attempt ranks first among all running backs with at least 50 carries. He had 30% of the team's yards against the Browns on a single run in the third quarter. Despite all of the offensive potential on this roster, the Steelers under Canada have not been able to make it work. This was Canada's third season as Pittsburgh's OC. They haven't ranked higher than 21st in points per game in a season since he took over. Making the change now at least gives Tomlin an opportunity to salvage the offense for the rest of this season as they look to hold on to a playoff spot. They currently occupy the number 7 seed in the AFC with a 6-4 record going into Sunday's game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Now let's talk about some soccer. Inter Miami denied it has agreed to compete in the Riyadh Season Cup, which would have potentially pitted Lionel Messi against Al Nassr and star forward Cristiano Ronaldo. The club called Tuesday's announcement about its participation, quote, inaccurate, and added team managing owner Jorge Mas has made no comments publicly or privately in relation to the preseason tour. Earlier in the day, Inter Miami versus Al Nassr was promoted as part of the Riyadh Season Cup and billed the last dance between Messi and Ronaldo. The pair most recently faced off this past January when PSG beat a Riyadh All-Stars 11 squad 5-4 in Saudi Arabia. Many thought that that would be the last time Messi and Ronaldo shared a pitch since they're spending the twilight of their careers on different continents. Based on Inter Miami's statement, it still might be. In a perfect scenario, Messi and Ronaldo would contest a farewell match of sorts in the FIFA World Cup or UEFA Champions League, stages befitting their status within the sport. The Riyadh Season Cup at least theoretically presented a finite conclusion to their long-running rivalry on the pitch. For more than a decade, Messi and Ronaldo cast a white shadow over world football. Ronaldo won the first of his 5 Ballon d'Or awards in 2008, and the pair of he and Messi went on to lift the trophy in 12 of the next 14 years. Ronaldo's move to Real Madrid in 2009 also put them on opposite sides for one of Europe's biggest derbies for 9 seasons. Fans spent countless hours arguing which of the two is better, a debate that has probably come to an end thanks to Messi's record 8 Ballon d'Ors and Argentina's 2022 World Cup triumph. If it were to come together, one more friendly would undoubtedly be used to yet again put Messi and Ronaldo legacies side by side. Let's talk about Monday Night Football. It won't be a win that Jalen Hurts puts in the scrapbook anytime soon, but he and the Philadelphia Eagles did just enough to defeat the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium in a rematch of last season's Super Bowl with a 21-17 victory. Hurts and the Eagles' offense took a while to get going, entering halftime down 10 points and struggling to move the ball against excellent Kansas City defense. The MVP hopeful had just 46 passing yards in the first half with as many completions as sacks with 5. However, he and the rest of the unit managed to turn up the notch over the final 30 minutes, putting together a couple of scoring drives that both ended in Hurts with a rushing touchdown. He had the biggest throw of the night in the fourth quarter, a 41-yard bomb to Devontae Smith that set up a tush push from the 1-yard line. Hurts ended the night with 150 yards, an interception, and two rushing touchdowns. As close as Hurts was, the real story of the game was Philadelphia's defense that, after giving up 17 points in the first half, shut out the Chiefs and superstar quarterback Patrick Mahomes in the final two quarters. Kansas City had four punts, a fumble, and a turnover on downs in the second half. Unheard of for Mahomes-led unit. Still, Philly fans showed a ton of love to Hurts for another clutch performance in what was a revenge game for the city. I mean, Super Bowl revenge, essentially, even though it's a regular season game, but still congrats to the Eagles on the huge win. Let's see, what do we have next? Let's switch gears to the NBA. Another day and another instance of Dylan Brooks calling out an opponent, and this time it was his former team, saying, quote, you can see now they have no swagger, the Houston Rockets forward said of the Memphis Grizzlies ahead of their Wednesday showdown. We have swagger, we have an identity, we're building. Each and every game we show it more and more. That's what I want for my guys. That's what I want for each and every guy on the floor to play their best basketball. Swagger or not, this has been a brutal start to the season for the Grizzlies. Steven Adams, Brendan Clark, Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, and Xavier Tillman Sr. are all injured, and star player John Morant is yet to play because he is serving a 25-game suspension. As a result, Memphis is 3-10, which is tied for the fewest number of wins in the Western Conference. It is not where a team with championship aspirations in recent years wants to be, and Brooks clearly isn't too broken up about the struggles. His Rockets are 6-6 and have been something of a roller coaster this season, with a 6-game winning streak in the middle of 2 3-game losing streaks, one of which is ongoing heading into Wednesday's contest. There is reason for optimism with a group of Alperen Sengun, Jalen Green, Fred VanVleet, Jabari Smith Jr., and Dylan Brooks. It is a nice mix of young, promising talent and veteran talents, and Houston is in early playoff position. It is also anything but surprising that the Brooks is the one making headlines for his comments ahead of the game. He rarely hesitates to speak his mind, including during infamous back and forth with LeBron James, and recently told Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated, quote, what I didn't like about Memphis was they allowed that so they can get out of the woodwork, and then I'm the scapegoat of it all. That's what I didn't appreciate, and then ultimately they'll come to me on the low as men, one-on-one, and tell me something, but then not defend me when everything went down. The Grizzlies decided to not bring Brooks back this offseason, and there is apparently still some bitterness in place. He will surely be under the spotlight on Wednesday when he faces his former team for the first time. Let's transition back to the NFL. Veteran linebacker Shaquille Leonard announced Tuesday he has been waived by the Indianapolis Colts. He shared a statement on X, formerly known as Twitter, confirming his departure and thanking Colts fans. He's making a $15.7 million guaranteed base salary, about $6.1 million for the rest of this season, and he has another $6.5 million guaranteed for injury in 2024. So it's hard to imagine he gets claimed. In all likelihood, he'll clear and become a free agent. The reasoning behind the move is unclear, though Leonard had displayed some frustration over his playing role earlier this month. He has appeared in 9 games this year, missing the Colts Week 5 victory over the Titans due to a groin injury. However, Leonard played just 70% of the team's defensive snaps when active, per Pro Football Reference. By contrast, he had never finished below 93% in that category prior to 2022, when back trouble and a concussion limited him to 3 games. The 28-year-old isn't performing up to his usual standard. His 65 tackles put him on pace to eclipse the century mark for the fifth time, but he has yet to register a sack. His missed tackle rate, 7.1%, is the highest of his career as well. Quote, Leonard's production has not lined up with his salary. Even if it seems premature for Indianapolis to cut him midseason, it also appeared to be inevitable. Leonard signed a well-deserved 5-year, $98.5 million extension in August 2021, but this year he was essentially reduced to being an overpaid rotational linebacker. Still, Leonard's release comes as a bit of a surprise since he remained a starter for the Colts, and moving on from him now doesn't provide any short-term financial relief if the rest of the league lets him clear waivers. In addition, the Colts are only 1 game behind of the Steelers for the final wildcard spot in the AFC. Players of Leonard's stature typically don't become available at this point in the season. The trade deadline has passed, and the free agents who would have provided a meaningful impact have long since been signed somewhere. Of course, whoever adds Leonard isn't getting the same player who reeled off 3 straight Pro Bowl nods. He'll provide some nice depth at linebacker, but he may not tip the scales much for a team attempting to move up in the standings. Let's switch gears to some baseball now. The San Diego Padres have found their man as they hired Mike Schilt as their next manager on Tuesday. He agreed to a 2-year contract, the team announced. The San Diego Union Tribune reported on November 6th that the Padres were down to their final 3 candidates, and now it's clear that Schilt separated himself from the pack. Schultz will be replacing Bob Melvin, who departed San Diego this offseason after 2 years as manager, to accept the same position with the San Francisco Giants. The Padres didn't receive compensation for Melvin's move to the Bay Area. Quote, I think as we went through the process the last 2 years, like any relationship, there were things you liked and there were things that we felt we could have done better. Padres general manager AJ Preller said after Melvin's departure, for us, there clearly was a path forward that we have a good group and could have success. But this gives us an opportunity to really start focusing on adding a manager that from our standpoint fits what we're trying to do, fits our team and our clubhouse, and somebody that's going to help lead this club here moving forward. The Padres feel like they found that in Schild, who spent the 2022 season in a player development role with them prior to joining San Diego. Schild served as manager of the St. Louis Cardinals for four seasons from 2018 to 2021. He led the team to three playoff appearances, including a trip to the NLCS in 2019 after finishing first in the NL Central that season. Schild is taking over a Padres team that finished third in the NL West with an 82-80 record and failed to make the playoffs despite having the third highest payroll in the majors last season. Their disappointing showing in 2023 came after they made a surprising run to the 2022 NLCS. San Diego has a star-studded lineup that includes Manny Machado, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Xander Bogaerts. Still, the team had a middling offense that ranked 13th in the MLB in runs scored with 752 and 20th in batting average at 244. It will be up to Schild to make it work on the field, as San Diego fans will once again have high expectations for the Padres to be one of the top teams in the National League next season, as they should. LeBron James, 39,000 point club table for one. LeBron James surpassed 39,000 points for his incredible career during the first quarter of Tuesday's game against the Utah Jazz. The Lakers star entered the contest with 38,995 points and needed only 5 points to reach the mark. The Kings surpassed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record of 38,387 points during a February game against the Oklahoma City Thunder last season. It was another accomplishment in a career that includes 4 championships, 4 NBA Finals MVPs, 4 league MVPs, 19 All-NBA selections, 6 All-Defensive selections, and 19 All-Star appearances. Perhaps the most notable thing is he isn't even known as a pure scorer and still has more points than anyone in history. The 40,000-point club will be the next accomplishment, and there is no reason to think he won't get there, given his unmatched durability and ability to impact the game even in his 21st season at 38 years old. He entered Thursday's game averaging 26.4 points, 8.3 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and 1.7 steals per game this season, and looks well on his way to another All-Star game and perhaps All-NBA chance. The accomplishments are one thing for the future Hall of Famer, but he's surely only focused on adding another ring to his resume. After all, LeBron is discussed alongside Michael Jordan, Abdul-Jabbar, and others in debates about the best players in the history of the game, and winning a fifth ring would only bolster arguments in his favor when he does eventually retire. No, 100%. 100%. We got some more soccer to talk about. Argentina's players left the pitch at Rio de Janeiro's Maracanã Stadium before Tuesday's CONMEBOL World Cup qualifier against Brazil due to fighting in the stands between supporters of the rival nations. Cops were fighting as well. The scenes were pretty crazy, to be honest. The game was delayed for 30 minutes before Argentina returned to the pitch and the game kicked off. Brazil's team stayed on the pitch during the delay. Argentina, which took the lead in the 61st minute on a Nicolas Otamendi, came into the game atop South America, qualifying on 12 points after 5 games. Brazil was 5th in qualifying on 7 points, though a loss would drop them to 6th after Ecuador won earlier on Tuesday. Argentina are the defending World Cup champions. Now I'm going to take a look at my college football bowl predictions. So my top 4 is Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and Washington, and then Oregon is 5. Yeah, Birmingham, let's see, Southdown. LA, the LA Bowl, UNLV versus UCLA. Let's see. Cotton Bowl, Texas and Missouri, Peach Bowl. Okay, what do we got next? College. Yeah, that's pretty much all I mean, Paul DeJong signed with the White Sox. What other MLB news was there today? Paul DeJong signed with the White Sox. Or he didn't officially sign, he's nearing a deal. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Thank you guys. 35 minutes flew by. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is episode number 417 of the one and only Sean Sports Talk podcast. And I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.